Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy Monday, everybody. I hope you guys had an awesome Thanksgiving weekend. Yes, you're hearing my voice. This is Jake Heaps. Here with Curtis Rogers next to me.
Good morning, Jay.
For this show on Monday. And we've got Mike Lefko behind the glass. We do not have Stacy Ross with us. Fortunately, she's not feeling well. So we are sending her all of the best wishes possible. And hopefully she is back with us tomorrow. We'll have to wait and see. We'll see. We'll see what the timeline looks like.
Stacy wanted to turn the four-day weekend into a five-day weekend.
Correct. Maybe she didn't want to face everybody after the Apple Cup.
I mean, that was my plan as well, but... Here I am.
Here you are. You were gonna have the show off because of this Monday night football
weekend.
Game.
Yeah,
that's
that
right.
Was the great plan.
And Stacy ruined it for you. So you know, Lefko, you are truly the best for coming in. We really appreciate you. Thank you, man.
True team player. Too.
Yes. But we've got an awesome show dialed up for you this Monday. And we've got newest second baseman Adam Frazier acquired via trade. On with us at 11 o'clock. We've got our own. Friend of the show, ESPN's Brady Henderson, coming up at noon. We've got don't worry, just because Stacy isn't here, we've got our quiz that's going to be here at 1:30. Curtis, don't worry, I still got a chance to
beat
you.
You're telling me not to worry. You're the one down 6-4 on the season. You don't want to fall in a 7-4 hole.
Yeah, I'm not.
By the way, we've got two quizzes this week with the Monday night game tonight. And then we've got Friday going into the Sunday game next week. I mean, Jake, you're down 6-4. You could be down 8-4 right now. Could you go home and look your family in the eye with an 8-4 deficit on the season?
I don't know if I could, to be quite honest with you. I think I would be a great disappointment to Jackson. So I can't let that happen. But Curtis, there has been a lot that's happened over the weekend. I mean, my goodness, there is so much that's happened over the weekend. Talk about Mariners, we just talked about them acquiring Adam Frazier via trade. All the movement that's gone on with free agency. Marcus Semien signing with the Rangers. Guys going left and right. All these Mariners targets that are flying off the shelves right now. And Jeff Passan, coming into today, said that these next 24 hours was going to be the craziest 24 hours of this deadline period that we're running up on. You have the Seahawks Monday Night Football game, which is where I want to get going here. This game here for the Seahawks, Curtis, is going to be vital. It is vital. It is honestly their last hope to make the playoffs. And if they can't pull this off, Curtis, it is going to be a situation that we're looking at the future of the Seattle Seahawks rather than the rest of the season and trying to hold out hope for the playoffs. But if you look at how the weekend went, in terms of the playoff situation, the Eagles lost. You had the Rams that lost. You had everybody that was in front. The Panthers lost of the Seahawks, which then gives them a continued glimmer of hope.
Yeah, they win tonight. Yes. They're one game out of that seventh playoff spot.
It's crazy.
After all that we have seen through the season's first 10 games, they're still not out of it.
Curtis, can you believe that? I mean, honestly, like I still am in shock. Like, I looking at this team at 3-7, I'm saying that the season's over. It's wrapped up. But legitimately, they still have a chance if they win this game.
Well, and you look at their schedule that's coming up here, it gets significantly easier. Yeah, you still have a game against the Rams and a game against the Cardinals, both of those on the road.
Don't forget the 49ers.
Yeah,
who are
the 49ers as well, which is going to be the next game you play after tonight. That's a home game as well. It doesn't – there is still some, you know, games along the way that – you will not expect the Seahawks to win, but there are plenty that the Seahawks can take advantage of. The Texans, the Lions, the Bears, all those teams, you know, you look at them and what the Seahawks have done this season is they've beaten the bad teams, but they have not fared well against the good teams. I would not lump Washington, the football team, among the good football teams. They're the Washington bad football team. That's how I would put it right now. So there is an opportunity for them tonight to take advantage of the matchup that they've got in store for them. But, boy, when I look at this Seahawks team, I kind of want it to go one of two ways. Either get to the playoffs or put us out of their misery, or put us out of our misery as soon as possible so that we can focus on the offseason, because there's nothing worse than having to talk about NFL games with zero playoff implications on the line. And we talked about that in our show prep today, that when Russell Wilson has been the quarterback of this Seahawks team, there has not been a single game that he has quarterbacked where the Seahawks have been eliminated from the postseason at the time of kickoff. That has not happened. In 2017, they missed the playoffs, but they were still alive heading into Week 17 against the Cardinals that week, and they lost, which ended their playoff hopes, but they were still alive. We have never once seen him quarterback a game where there was nothing on the line.
And that is a situation that Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, they have never been in before. They don't know how to handle that situation. And so I think that when you had this last game that they had lost, and you have Pete Carroll talking at the podium, him being in a very somber tone, it really showed and illustrated that they had never been in this situation. And what do you do moving forward? What is the message moving forward? And I told this to Stacey last week, as long as there is a 0.5% chance, you know that that is what they're going to point to. You know that that is the mantra that they are going to have 1 week at a time. And quite frankly, Curtis, even if they make the playoffs, I still think there's a bigger conversation that needs to be had about the Seahawks and about their overall outlook and how do they get better and progress moving forward. If Russell Wilson is going to be here, if Pete Carroll is going to be, I think all of those conversations just get delayed if you keep winning. And I would love to keep delaying that conversation.
Put it off, put it off.
Exactly. I'm not ready for that yet. And that is honestly what I'm hoping happens is you see this offense start to click. And Curtis, there couldn't be a better time for the Seahawks right now. Honestly, it's not better. It's just the only time. And if your back is against the wall this bad, Curtis, I'm glad it's against Washington's defense, because heading into this game, yeah, they've played better. They're on a two-game winning streak, and they've looked definitely better in that stretch. Taylor Heineke's playing better at quarterback. But you talk about them defensively and where they struggle in the pass. They rank 28th in passing defense. They rank 28th in points given up. And so, and guess what? You also have your two starting defensive ends in Montez Sweat and Chase Young, who are absolute monsters out there on the edge. And two guys that you would have to play very, very differently if they were on the field, they're not out there. So this is the very best time for this passing offense, for Russell Wilson on his 33rd birthday to have a day.
Wow, somebody older than Stacey. Unbelievable. Jake, you mentioned Washington's pass defense being 28th in the league. That's all fine and dandy, but what has been the Seahawks' biggest struggle offensively the last two games? It's through the air. It's passing the ball.
Right.
They have looked out of sorts against the Cardinals and also against the Packers. What do you think, or do you think that they have got it all figured out heading into tonight's game? Do you think that there is going to finally be this eureka moment, this moment where this passing offense looks like what it was against the Colts in week one, where, you know, it looked like early on in that Titans game in week two? By the way, think of the butterfly effect from that Titans game. If the Seahawks hold on and win that game, how does this season look? It looks so completely different. They're rolling. They're 2-0. They go off and you know, maybe win week three. They're probably a playoff team looking at this season, but that's a whole other thing. But what do you think this offense can do tonight against a Washington team that the numbers say the Seahawks should have success? But as we've seen the last couple of weeks, that has not been the case.
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, the offense and Russell Wilson, and they have not played a full 60 minutes of football. Good football. And that is the unique challenge that that they are faced with right now, because the honest truth is that the way that they're going to win football games, if they're even going to have a chance to win in the playoffs, or sorry, to get to the playoffs and get a playoff spot, is by having this passing offense start to really click, and having Russell Wilson in his third game back now, removed from that injury, really start to see him come alive, really start to see him play the way that we all know Russell Wilson is fully capable of playing and what the expectation of him is. But the other part of that is, what is their identity going to be, Curtis? Because that's the other part, is they have not had a clear identity as to who they are, what they want to be, And heading into this game, I think they have to cut it loose. I mean, I just told you the stats in terms of how this shakes up and where the matchup is favorably. They're sixth in rushing defense. They're really good up front with their defensive tackles. And I think their passing defense is susceptible without question. And you have to be able to take advantage of that with Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, and Tyler Lockett. Now is the time. And I fully expect this offense to be more aggressive out of the gate, to be more aggressive on first and second down. That is my overall expectation. And if not, I'm going to be highly disappointed. I don't mean 40 attempts in this game. I still think that they should be balanced and rooting the run game, Curtis. But at some point, you got to cut it loose. And there's no better time than right now.
No better time. You know, they call it the present because it's a gift. You think
that they do.
You think the Seahawks are down bad. There's a lot of people out there that are like, oh, the Seahawks are 3-7. Why bother even talking about going 7-0 the rest of the way? Well, in Washington, they're talking about this football team on the local TV networks and radio stations in that area. Darren Haynes, who's a sports anchor at WUSA, making the case that the Washington football team has it worse off than everybody else.
The Washington football team has the worst case of the Mondays, y'all. Washington will play Seattle in their first true Monday night football game in 2 years, and that's not a good thing. Here's why. For 23 years, nobody has been worse on Monday night football than the Washington football team. They've lost 7 consecutive Monday night games at home, worse in the NFL. They've also lost 8 consecutive games overall on Monday Night Football, worst in the NFL. They've lost 17 of their last 18 Monday Night Football games at home, worst in the NFL during that span. And since 1998, Washington's 5-24 record on Monday Night Football.
We know the worst in the NFL.
So, with that being said,
everything about that guy, yeah. So awkward.
Local news stations continue to kill it with their production like that. But, I mean, look, he brings up very, very favorable statistics in terms of the Seahawks, that Washington just has no business being on Monday Night Football ever. And when they are about as bad as you can possibly be. 5-24 in their last 29 Monday Night games?
Yeah. Worst in the NFL.
Yeah.
Oh, if you didn't know that. Worst in the NFL.
If you haven't heard, they're the worst in the NFL. So, look, Seahawks are 3-7, but as they say, there is a chance. There is a chance tonight that the Seahawks could get it done. And, look, this football team is, they're hurting as well. And they are nowhere near as good as I think a lot of people thought they were going to be. Especially with Ryan Fitzpatrick having missed the entire season because of that water slide injury he suffered in the offseason.
Right. Controversial.
Yeah. So, look, I look at this game tonight. It's going to go – any possibility is up for grabs right now. There is anything that could happen tonight, and I would not be surprised by any outcome.
I wouldn't either, but I'll tell you this. I'll be highly, highly disappointed if the Seahawks don't come out with a victory tonight. I mean – This is the opportunity that you need to get yourself started. Offensively, defensively, Taylor Heineke has been playing better over the last 2 weeks, but he is as streaky comes, and you have the ability to go be aggressive, be the aggressor in this game, dictate how this game is going to go. Don't just try to survive through the game, thrive. And that is something that I want to see the Seattle Seahawks really flip the script on how they've approached this season as they've got their last 7 games. Go down swinging, go down with a fight. That is something that I'm going to be watching heavily as we watch them here this Monday night. All right, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to Headline Rewrites brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Well, the Cougs won their first Apple Cup since 2012, and it was the biggest blowout win ever over UW. What is the real headline?
Real headline? Weird how Stacey, the double major grad from Washington, isn't here the first show back after the Apple Cup.
Is it, though?
It's not.
I mean, to be honest, it was expected. I didn't think she would show her face after a true beatdown that the Washington State Cougs gave to to Washington in the Apple Cup. I mean, look, I favored Washington State in that game. I thought that they'd actually win pretty handily, but I didn't expect 40-13.
Four touchdowns?
My goodness. I mean, number one, shout out to Jake Dicker, who ends up getting the head job from Pat Chun. And obviously this victory was a situation where Jake Dicker put his stamp of approval for himself and said, look, I mean, are you really going to try and find somebody else? I'm your guy. And they went ahead with it. I still have my reservations about the hire, but I definitely understand why they went in this direction. And after a 40-13 beatdown, man, things are looking really good for, you know, Washington State as they head into a bowl game. And let's see if they can finish out 8-5 to finish the rest of the year after dealing with everything that they went through with the firing of Nick Rolovich through the middle of the year. I mean, to see that group rally together and finish the way that they have is pretty dang cool.
Do you think Friday night represented maybe a changing of the tides a little bit in the rivalry? Because you look at just how destructive the Cougs were in that game against Washington. I look at the Washington program. Any coach on that team should be forced to sit out a season because of just how bad this team was this year.
Yep.
That was the biggest reason why the Huskies finished 4-8 was coaching. From top to bottom, everybody on that coaching staff had a role to play in that. There was no win in putting Sam Heward out there on Friday night, and it showed him throwing four interceptions in his first career start. Yeah, you didn't burn his red shirt, but you may have hurt his confidence going forward. That to me was just a no-win situation for UW, a no-win situation for Sam Heward. What are you doing, Washington? Good riddance that this season is over from a Husky perspective. And look, Kalen DeBoer appears to be getting some serious interest. Adam Rittenberg and Kyle Bonagura of ESPN both reporting this morning that Jen Cohen is on her way to Fresno to interview
Kalen
DeBoer. I mean, I don't think you go through all that to not hire somebody like
Yeah,
that.
I just don't think that they probably could not have pried Matt Campbell away or somebody like Dave Aranda that they really, really liked. And so DeBoer, we'll have to wait and see on that, but it definitely points to that direction. And if you're UW, honestly, if you're a UW fan today, if you're a UW fan on Friday watching that, and you're watching Jaden Delora plant the flag in the middle of your field, I hope it was a wake-up call. And that's what you hope if you're a fan looking at the athletic department, looking at the way that they approach this moving forward. This has to be the wake-up call that you needed, that you're not the biggest and baddest program out there. And Washington State, you've been able to dominate them for the past 8 years. Well, that's over. And it's time to find yourself, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and get back to work. And that, to me, is what Washington has to do in this situation. They have to do it on the recruiting trail. They have to do it with the X's and O's and the coaching. And it all starts with Jen Cohen finding the right head coach of the future.
Headline rewrites.
The Mariners acquired second baseman Adam Frazier from the Padres in exchange for a pair of prospects. What's the real headline?
The baseball equivalent of your parents telling you you've got Marcus Semien at home when it's the store brand version.
Gosh. Curtis, Frazier's
a good player.
He is.
He gets the job done.
But
he's not going to hit you 45 home runs.
No, I mean, here's the thing. He is a good player, and when you talk about Jerry Dipoto and how he said that he betters our lineup, he lengthens our lineup. In theory, yes.
You're still missing a third baseman.
Correct. As of right now.
Which would put your lineup back at what it was a year ago.
Not even that. Because Adam Frazier isn't hitting 35 home runs. He's not hitting for over 100 RBI. I mean, Adam Frazier is a more sure thing. He's an equivalent to J.P. Crawford last year. In terms of his production, his play, what he can do for you. That's a valuable player. Getting the ball in play, getting on base, playing, you know, good solid defense. Those are all very good things. But the biggest issue still remains for the Mariners, which is impact bat. And they not only need to get one, they need to get two at this point, right? And so this Adam Frazier is, I guess I would say, a nice start, but losing out on the Marcus Semien sweepstakes, I think hurts. It also makes me nervous as to what they're going to be willing or not willing to do when it comes to Trevor Story, when it comes to Chris Bryant, Curtis. is it just another one of those situations where they go into it thinking that, ooh, man, we're going to be right in the thick of things, and then they realize very quickly, trade deadline, now free agency, that the market's just a little bit too hot, a little bit too rich for their liking, and they're not willing to go all the way.
Headline rewrites.
The Pac-12 coaching carousel spun pretty hard this weekend with Washington State officially promoting Jake Dickert and USC landing a massive hire in Lincoln Riley. What's the real headline?
Oklahoma fans pretend to be backstabbed while conveniently forgetting they root for an NBA team that was stolen.
And not even that, Curtis. Not even that, because that is absolutely true.
I don't
but
blame
Oklahoma's
Lincoln Riley
also backstabbing the entire Big 12 on their way out the door to the SEC. I mean, come on. But I will tell you this. I was in shock. I could not believe that USC was able to pry Lincoln Riley away from Oklahoma. That, I mean, you have to applaud SC for being able to do that. That is a huge, huge get for the Pac-12. It makes everybody in the Pac-12 better. It makes USC better. They will become a national power under Lincoln Riley with his ability to recruit Southern California and all of that talent not leaving to the Big 12 and the SEC as frequent, as often. Man, but what you will see, I think, is USC have a pretty easy time in the Pac-12, especially with UW. I think not going out and being aggressive in their hiring process. And then shout out to Jake Dickert for getting the job. I just, again, I think, Curtis, both things, you could disagree with me, but I think both things can be true. What an amazing job he did as an interim head coach this season, rallying everybody together, but also think that this is not the answer for WSU to be successful moving forward. I think that there were other guys out there that, other opportunities out there that would have been excellent fits for Washington State and allowed them to really compete to be a 10-win type of team consistently in the Pac-12. And right now, I'm wondering what Jake Dickert is going to be as a full-time guy, recruiting. What is he going to want offensively full-time? Because remember, that offense that dominated in the Apple Cup, that's not Jake Dickert's offense. Brian Smith called an amazing game, but that's not his guy. Is he going to stick with that, or is he going to look elsewhere?
We'll talk about the coaching carousel later on in the show, but just kind of based off first impressions with the Dickert promotion, and now it looks like Washington could be honing in on Kalen DeBoer. You almost get the sense that both schools went the safe route, or are going the safe route in choosing their head coach rather than trying to go for a big splash. And oh, by the way, at 11 o'clock, we have Mariners second baseman Adam Frazier coming on with us.
Yes, we do.
I promise I won't call him store brand Marcus Semien.
Probably
in that,
not.
That might not be a good look. But, yeah, he's coming up here at 11 o'clock sharp with us.
Well, can't wait for that. All right, guys. We've got the Mariners have their guy. Jerry DePoto breaks down what makes Adam Frazier the ideal second baseman for the Yams. Coming up next on Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right, welcome into Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps here hosting today because Stacy Rost is out. I have Curtis Rogers next to me. This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Now, as we watched the market, the free agent market in Major League Baseball absolutely explode over the weekend, I couldn't help but feel, Curtis, like the Mariners were falling behind. Am I wrong on that?
It felt like all your friends got invited to a party and you didn't. Now, I wouldn't know anything about that, and you wouldn't know anything about that. Stacy might, but it just felt like, hey, that Starling Marte, that's a guy who the Mariners should have interest in. Marcus Semien, that's a guy who the Mariners should have interest in. Max Scherzer, that's a guy who the Mariners should have interest in. Even guys like John Gray and Kevin Gausman, those are guys who the Mariners should have interest in. They've all signed elsewhere, and now it leaves the Mariners with a lot less options to pick from, and the lockout is going to happen in a couple of days here. They are going to have to really get after it over the next probably 24 hours if they want to make sure they don't get left at the altar here with a lot of these free agents. Now, there are a few that have been rumored to say, I'm not going to sign right now. I'm going to wait till February, maybe when things are hammered out with the new CBA.
Chris Bryant, rumored to be one of them.
Rumored, and that is one of the that should be one of the Mariners' top targets. It kind of has become one of the Mariners' top targets by default here because you're not getting Marcus Semien anymore, and you've really kind of put all your eggs in the Semien basket. Now you're left with Adam Frazier, who is a good player, but not a difference maker in the way that I think Semien would have been. And yeah, there are people on the text line that are like, 7 years for a guy who's going to be 32 years
old. Right,
that's
the thing I saw all the over the entire weekend as that blown up.
But here's the thing. The Mariners are not in a position to where they can dictate terms of a contract. If they want to wow one of these top-tier free agents, they're going to have to blow them away financially and with the years. Texas is a worse organization than the Mariners right now. But you know what they did? They're like, you know what, Marcus Semien? We'll give you that seventh year that no one else is going to give you for $25 million per. And that got the deal done. The Mariners are going to have to get uncomfortable if they want to land one of these top free agents.
Right. The thing that I kept going back to in that is, okay, I understand 7 years. You don't want to get into that. You went down that road a little bit with Robinson Cano. Again, every situation is not similar. Marcus Semien is not Robinson Cano in a lot of ways. But what I would say to that as well is, what about switching it in reverse? Why was there not, again, we don't know this for sure, but I have to imagine if the Mariners would have approached Marcus Semien and said, hey, we're not going to pay you 25 per year, we're going to pay you 30 per year, would that have changed? And taking off, you know, the years on that, would that have helped sway the decision? I don't know. But to act like, and I think this is the thing that is hard for me, is people immediately out there jumping to the defense of Jerry DePoto and the Mariners and saying, well, there's still plenty of other options. Well, it becomes more pressure-filled to land those options that you have at this point because you did lose out on Marcus Semien. Trevor Story, Chris Bryant. Yeah, there's Seiya Suzuki, there's Michael Conforto, there's Matt Chapman that you could get in a trade. There's other moves that
Jose
you could
Ramirez.
Make. Yeah, Jose Ramirez, but you would have to trade a lot for a guy like Jose Ramirez. There's things that are available to you, but just looking at it from the standpoint of Trevor Story. Trevor Story's going to have other suitors. Trevor Story is going to be in a position where he has his picking. What is the Mariners going to offer him that everyone else isn't? And are they going to be willing to do that?
And look, Trevor Story had a down year last year, but looking at how a lot of these free agents have fared on the market, I would not be stunned if there's a team out there that's willing to commit 4, 5, 6 years to him, just based off of, look, you have the ability to add a guy with a tremendous power bat. Yeah, he does not hit as well away from Coors Field as he does at home, which has been the case with a lot of players in that Rockies organization over the years, but power translates wherever you play. And Trevor Story's bat, I think, is one that, yeah, the numbers say that he's worse away from Colorado than he is at home, but you put him in a very favorable ballpark or you put him in a lineup that's got some protection around him, I think that could really, you know, make him a player that has success away from Colorado, much like guys like Matt Holliday, who had success with the Cardinals for a lot of years away from the Rockies organization.
Mm-hmm.
There is that potential there. So I think if Trevor Story was somebody that the Mariners went out and got, and Brent Stecher wrote how he would fit in the Mariners lineup over the weekend on 710sports.com, which I highly suggest you read that if you are in the Trevor Story camp. And not a lot has been said about Chris Bryant, whether or not the Mariners are super-duper interested in him. I would hope that they are, just based off
how
free agencies played out.
Right, they were in and inquired about him via trade this last year. I don't think they were serious in terms of what they would have to do to pull that off. But I do believe that there's serious interest in Chris Bryant. I really do believe that that is something, that is a name that they have zeroed in on in this conversation. But also, I don't believe, and this is what also worries me, is that they're not tied to anybody. You can't be in free agency necessarily, but at the same time, if you're comfortable just letting contracts walk out the door or letting players walk out the door because you're not comfortable with the contracts. Well, guess what? You're the Seattle Mariners. You're not somebody that has consistently gone to the playoffs. You are not somebody that I believe at this point should be turning your nose up at most deals. You need to be able to go in, dive in with 2 feet. And yes, you might be in a situation where you're overpaying or you might be giving more years than what you're comfortable with. But right now, I'm not concerned about Marcus Semien 5 years from now or 4 years from now. I'm worried about it right now. And if you're worried about the money from a Mariners perspective, why? And if you're worried about the years, well, guess what? All the money that the Mariners could make by having a very successful franchise over the next 4 years could allow them to eat that money at the end of a contract and be just fine with it. So that, to me, is the part of the conversation that I get, but also at the same time, I don't believe is a good enough excuse.
Well, and the goal of this rebuild was to build a contender in 2022, 2023, and beyond. Adding a player like Marcus Semien, and I think people are misconstruing what we're saying that, oh, you had to go out and get Marcus Semien. No, there are still guys out there, but you're going to have to sign contracts similar to what Semien signed with the Rangers.
Right. I just believe it's a precursor.
Yeah.
It's a precursor to say, ooh, that deal was too rich. What's going to say Trevor Story's deal isn't going to be too rich? Or Chris Bryant? Or any of these other guys that have true impact bats?
And those bats will make your team better in 2022 and 2023 and 24, maybe even a little bit after that. 2022 should not... Or what you might pay those guys in 2028, 2029 should not really have an impact on what you see in them right now. That's a problem for another GM, maybe.
Right. That's a problem. Let's be honest. That's a problem for John Stanton and ownership. And yeah, you're right. It could be another GM. Hopefully not. Hopefully yeah. Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais are killing it here. But that is a problem to have down the road.
Absolutely. And look, teams that have made these kinds of moves, teams that have made these kinds of signings while sort of building towards it, have had relative levels of success. You look at the Cubs, when they signed Jason Hayward, they signed him for like 9 years, $184 million. Yeah, that contract looks bad in hindsight, but they had to get that done because the Cubs, up until that point, were nothing. They were not a good team. They were tearing it down to the studs year after year. They were finally building it back up. You had Chris Bryant and Javi Baez. Those guys had debuted, and then Jason Hayward comes and signs. That was a move that took them over the top and got them a World Series title, but now it looks like a bad contract. But look, it got them a World Series title.
Right, I'll take that all day, every day. All right, we're going to get into this conversation more. We've got a lot to say about this. We didn't even get into some of the other guys. Kevin Gausman signs with the Toronto Blue Jays. Marcus Stroman is out there right now. There is a lot going on, and I have a feeling that we're going to get a lot of updates throughout the show with more free agent signings. But here's what's coming up next. Send us your boldest takes for the Seahawks game tonight, because the boldest take will be read live on air. But what I really want to know is if my bold take is going to be bolder than what Curtis and Lefko got. That's coming up next.
It's time for Bold Take
Monday.
Nice. All right, we got Bold Take Monday coming at you, where we reveal the hottest bold takes. It is very original here in the sports radio industry. We are the only show that does it. Lefko, true. I don't know if you've ever heard of this before, but we give bold takes every single, what would you say, Friday before the Seahawks game?
Now it's day before Seahawks game, or
the day of, right? So
Revolutionary concept.
Groundbreaking. Only us. So, Lefko, I don't know if you know how to do it or not, so I am going to let the Curtis
We're
Rogers.
Gonna guide you. And
I'm going to let the Curtis Rogers kick it off for us. Then I'm going to read some bold takes. So you just kind of get the juices flowing a little bit. Then I'll send it your way. And then I'll top it off with mine, because I am positive mine will be bolder than both of yours.
Man, so my bold take, I'm looking at this injury report going into tonight's game. It's not looking hot for the Seahawks right now. Damian Lewis out with the elbow. DeMarco Jones out with a back injury. Rashad Penny out with a hamstring. Travis Homer out with a calf injury. That, and then also Alex Collins was limited pretty much all week with an abdomen injury. So that running back room is hurting. And
yes,
there's a guy in that running back room by the name of Demetrius Dallas Jr., a.k.a. DJ Dallas.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you what will happen tonight.
Okay.
Now, the Seahawks have had one 100-yard rusher in about the course of, what, two, three seasons, and that was Alex Collins earlier this season. I think DJ Dallas builds off the performance he had against the Cardinals. Four carries, 25 yards. Respectable. Over 5 yards a carry. I think tonight, DJ Dallas not only goes over 100 yards rushing.
Don't you do it.
But has two scores as well. DJ Dallas, 100 yards rushing, two touchdowns against the Washington football team.
Okay. Mike Lefko,
that deserves an air horn. That didn't get a horn? Oh, okay. There we go.
That deserves an air horn.
My bad.
Now, here's the thing, though. With the running game, you want to have the running game obviously be a part of this offensive attack. But the thing that they're going to run into issues with is that Washington defense, even without Montez Sweat and Chase Young on the field, who were excellent in the run game as well as pass rushing, there are two very stellar defensive tackles for the Washington football team that get completely overlooked because it's not the sexy position. But I'll tell you this, Tim Settle, Darren Payne, Jonathan Allen, those three guys get after it up front, and it's going to be a very difficult challenge for Damian Lewis, Ethan Posick, and Gabe Jackson. Those three need a monster game. If DJ Dallas is going to rush for over 100 yards and two touchdowns, Curtis, which I...
Not if. When.
Okay.
DJ
All right.
Dallas does.
When he does it tonight, those three are going to have the game of their life because those three guys that I just mentioned up front are really, really strong in the run game. And if he's going to do it, I personally believe it's going to be because the pass sets up the run in this case for this particular game. All right, let me read.
Yeah, what do you got? Or let's go to the Mac and Jackson.
Yeah, the 206. My bold take, Curtis or Mike. Don't do the air horn here. I just have to read it. My bold take is that the Seahawks actually win.
Well, hey,
I mean, come on. All right, I guess I get it. They're 3-7, but all right.
Low hanging fruit.
Okay, come on. The 206. Wilson throws for 300 yards, and Collins rushes for 100 yards. The Seahawks win by double digits.
Wow.
Okay. All right. That would be quite the offensive show tonight. It would be great to see. I don't know if we're going to see both of those things happen, but I would certainly welcome it. The 509, DJ Reed returns a kick return for a touchdown. Okay. But the problem is DJ Reed is coming back off of injury, and he has not returned a kick so far this season.
No
but,
air
hey,
horns for that one.
Desperate times call for desperate measures.
Wow, one Jay, thing, you've little faith.
But honestly, what I want to see is D. Eskridge return a kick. I mean, isn't that one of the reasons you drafted him with their second round pick? I know, you know, being the third receiver and being out with the concussion, but now he's in his third game back after, you know, a stint off IR. He should be fully healthy, fully ready to contribute. Give him opportunities. Give him opportunities to have impactful plays, no matter how you get it done. He should be on the field. You should be trying to find ways to get him involved with this offense. That is another pick that has just driven me crazy, not because of the lack of talent. I think D. Eskridge is a very talented football player. But what I am frustrated with is the lack of usage or the lack of ways to try and use him on the field. That has really bothered me.
Now, this might be the boldest take we have ever received on the Mac and Jacks text line. 206-421-3776. This one from the 206. My bold take, Pete Carroll goes an entire game without wasting a timeout. That's
not happening.
If that happens, 206... Boy.
We're talking about a man who knows he's going to lose the challenge, but literally throws the challenge flag just because he just wants to give it a shot. Like, it is not happening. It is guaranteed that he's going to
lose. Sometimes that thing just gets stuck, though, and you want to get rid of it.
So he throws his electric hand
warmer. So he just throws it all out there.
There's a good chance that happens again.
Oh, that's the bold take.
It's going to be cold out there.
He'll throw his electric hand warmer again.
Instead of the red flag. Okay. Is that your bold take, Lefko?
No, I can't do that.
All right, what's your bold take?
Maybe. I don't know. Mine's not very bold compared to some of these. I think Seahawks win by a comfortable margin, like 24-10.
Wow.
Kind of game. And they shut down the WFT run game.
Okay. All right.
A team that ran for 190 yards last week.
Lefko, your first time doing bold takes, so I would say that that's a very good start. Good start for you on Bold Take
Monday.
I would
give that a horn. I would gladly give that a horn.
A very comfortable win would be shocking. I do not believe that that's going to be the case. I think this is going to be a roller coaster of a game. Taylor Heinicke is Ryan Fitzpatrick incarnate. I really do believe that this is going to be a close game that's going to come down to a touchdown drive or a field goal drive. It's just kind of the way that they've always played. And right now, with the way Washington has played, they are playing better football than the Seahawks are. So this would have to be a drastic change for the Seahawks this Monday night. All right, my bold take. Russell Carrington Wilson, on his 33rd birthday, will throw for over 300 yards, will rush for over 50 yards on the ground, and will have 4 touchdowns. Now, hold up. I'm not done yet.
What?
2 of those 4 touchdowns will be over 40 yards.
That is about its throwback of a performance.
He's about
to
walk it off, too.
Yeah. Yeah, Jake was going to throw his headset off.
You're about to walk
go
off.
Go to break. I'd be sitting here in silence.
If Stacy was leading, I would have walked off. That's then I forgot that I am having to lead today. So this is all backwards. All right, that was a lot of fun. Now, keep sending in your bold takes. We will continue to read your bold takes. This is Bold Take Monday throughout the show. So send them in. We'll have some fun reading them out throughout the show. Coming up next, though, newly acquired Adam Frazier, second baseman via trade. He will be on with us coming up next.